I know that they get this prison. Thank you for coming. John looks so pleased. Just meeting you because I don't have anything else to say. Nobody else can meet. And you come so rarely that, you know, I can only meet with you when you're here. Right over there to the commissioner, and just an apology, we didn't get the documentation out of this morning. As is the norm in this committee, we distribute the documentation Thursday before, as a very late Friday morning. But as you will recall, we were looking after cancel all sittings this week. Then we were told to go ahead, and then we were told, no, there's a media workshop for certain people, and therefore we couldn't go ahead meeting. And then we were told we could seek exemption, and so we got all of that last week, Wednesday. So we went back to the commissioner and said, can you please come? He had himself and his team another commitment, but they agreed to juggle it around. So because of this unusual circumstances here, we were allowed for this to be delivered this morning, but obviously in future it will come the week before. Having said that, can we hand over to the commissioner and his team? Thank you. And we will pick up, Bridget, the issues that arose at the last quarterly report. Okay, thank you. But I'm sure the commissioner is sensitive and also respond to the issues there. Thank you.
Chairperson and honourable members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be here again. If you have permission, Chairperson and the members, that we connect the presentation. But before we do our presentation, Chair, I have a delegation that accompanies me. My name is Tom Moyan, I'm the Commissioner. And on my left, I have Mr. Jonas Makwakwa, who is the Acting Chief Operations Officer. And next to him is Mr. Matswane Matwa, Chief Financial Officer. And next to him is Ms. Makung Tebule. She's the Acting Strategy, Enablement, and Communication. And the last person in the queue on the left-hand side is Mr. Sandile Memela, the spokesperson of SAS. And behind we have Mr. Katiso Tabe. So the last time we presented to yourselves, we gave a high-level overview of the programs that we intended to be involved in. And this is the first quarter report for 2015-2016 on measures that we wanted to put in place and we're reporting back to you. And we undertook to conduct the following key activities. On the vertical side was the operating model review. And also on that, we needed to also come to ourselves to report on the ICT and the modernization review. With respect to the first, the current state assessment of the organization and its processes and practices, that's what we wanted to do. Review the SARS operating model, review of SARS governance and decision-making processes, and finally, creation of a roadmap to align the organization to the new operating model. That's what we wanted to do with the operating model. With respect to the ICT and the modernization review, one of the key issues that we are to be involved in is the information technology strategy review, the architecture and technology review, IT sourcing, procurement and governance review, application development and project management review, the determination on the return on the investment of the past expenditure on the modernization strategy that was made in 2007-2008, look at the current project status, and also measure the achievements against the plan and cost incurred versus additional costs aligned to the budget. And finally, review IT contractual agreements, service level agreements, and ownership of intellectual property. Those were the issues that we had to do. But Chair and honorable members of the committee, we indicated that for us to be able to get on this roadmap, we were assisted. But firstly, we had the minister concurring with the management that we need to do the operating model review. And then the same was shared with the staff advisor report. Now, out of the two pillars that we spoke about, Bain and Gartner therefore gave us a prognostic, or what you call the diagnostics, of the progress that we have divided into three phases. The diagnostic phase, the phase where we are now, and the implementation. Once you report to yourself that the diagnostic process has been completed, and we have conducted the assessment and they've given us, identify the gaps that need to be filled and what to be done. We are currently developing solutions and detailed plans for to realize the improvements for both areas. Now today we would like to report to ourselves where we are. Now out of what the diagnostics has given us has revealed the following, not excluding the others. One, that there is a dire need for a turnaround on customs and excise, and that we need to address the tax gap and increase the taxpayer compliance. And thirdly, that we become a customer-centric organization. And finally, build a high-performance culture in operation. That will be the basis upon which we'll be able to build a sustainable SaaS. Which when you look into the house that we have provided in the schematic drawing that we have, it says SaaS will materially increase revenue if we are able to address some of these key issues and ensure strong control over its broader purpose and become a customer and employer-centric organization in order to move South Africa forward. But for us to be able to achieve these main pillars, there are certain enablers in the process, namely to improve information services and technology, and we want to indicate that service orientation becomes the mantra of the game that SaaS is involved in. But most importantly, in revising the operating model, it will be able to support the strategic priorities that we have. Chairperson, we want to indicate upfront that when we look into the old operating model, that some of the key issues that the diagnostics have given us, which we have already indicated ourselves that there is a need for a strong turnaround on the customs and excise. In the previous structure, customs did not play a pivotal role and it was not prominent. And we'll be able to predicate this effectively. Now, with respect to customs and excise, we want to inform the honorable members in the committee that we want to regain port control, increase border control, facilitate and increase revenue. Now, for too long in our operating structure, we concentrated on one component in the revenue model that we have. That we concentrated in the main on the business and individual taxes at the expense of one of the major components that contributes to the revenue that we collect. Customs contributes approximately 15 to 20% of the total revenue for the country. But for us to protect customs and excise to a high level, we need to ensure that staff is adequately equipped with skills and we have resources and the equipment and the technology. And I want to take a pause on this particular point that in the month that I just got past, we had an interaction with the committee during our visit of Devon and the Cape Town ports. So as we demonstrate the need for us to be able to up the ante with respect to the importance of customs and excise. You recall, Mr. Chair and the committee members who were present, that we wanted to enhance our capability in the field of security so that we can limit the amount of illegal trade and goods coming through our port of entry. We did take the committee members through the port of Devon and the port of Cape Town, wherein we deployed container scanners. The view and the general consensus that we shared with you that we want to roll out this technology across the whole country, especially in the main port of entry. This will be the port of Devon, Cape Town, Richards Bay, as we develop the processes. But most importantly, for us to be able to have control of what comes through the ports of our country, delve into other countries, in particular Zimbabwe and the inland, we also want to make use of capabilities and the infrastructure that South Africa has created to use the way bridges as points wherein we can check the containers in terms of tracking them that have not been tempered in transit towards the destinations where they are going. Because it will serve no purpose for us to be able to have container scanners in the ports of entry and yet we fail to be accountable for where these containers end. Equally, we've indicated that Port of Cape Town and Devon are a case in point. We've indicated to the committee that the next land post, land border where it will be deploying a major scanner will be Bybridge. We've indicated that all things being equal, progress being done, By December, we'll be inaugurating the Stena at Bybridge, the largest land border post in the continent. We therefore want to also roll out the same technology at Lebombo between us and Mozambique. Also want to roll out the same process in Marcelo Bridge between us and Botswana and also with Swaziland. But Chairperson and the members of the committee, will recall those who participated with the meeting, but equally want to also strengthen our capability in terms of goods and services that come through our ports of entry, namely new technology in terms of baggage scanners. We have already rolled out at Othia, Kinshasa, and also here in Cape Town. And we'll be able to demonstrate that we have been successful in the process in reducing the intrusion of illegal products and drugs into our country. And finally, before we come to that, we also want, which is a subject for discussion with ourselves, the rollout of body scanners, which is a very emotional issue. We need to be able to have a consensus across the country that these scanners are not intrusive into the human rights of our citizens and passengers who are coming to our country. But it is becoming more essential and critical internationally that we cannot just be sitting on the sideline and see things happening without taking a proactive approach. And at one point or the other, would request your indulgence and support in this regard, of course, in compliance with the laws of this country. But Chairperson and the members of the committee, allow me therefore to perhaps give you statistical data which is not contained in your report, as it indicated that you are called upon to come and present yourself. The successes gained out of the deployment of container scanners as well as baggage scanners. Just for the month of August, which is yet to be completed, we have close to about 60 million of illegal goods that we have impounded through the port of entry. One is a case in point of yesterday. Our officials who were beyond the call of duty, whom we very much grateful for, is that they stopped a passenger who was coming from Lagos with 125 kilos of liquid crystal meth. I think it's a new method of intrusion of illegal drugs into our country. Liquid crystal meth. Worth 37.6 million yesterday at Ortega. And this is an indication that the measures that we are putting in place are measures which says we are becoming both a technology and human-centric organization. Because in the past, we depended more on the technology at the expense of the experience of the people who will be able to identify these things. And the body scanners in this instance were an added value in the sense that official, when he or she was not satisfied with what you were seeing, there was a deviation to the scanner, body scanner. And indeed, we are proud of some of these, albeit small but big in terms of stopping illegal trade coming into our country. On the 23rd of this month, 14 kilos of crystal meth, where 4.2 was detected as Othia coming from India. On the 26.8 crystal meth coming from Dubai was detected through the baggage scanner, worth 8 million. And on the 12th, we stopped a gentleman coming, a passenger with 7 kilos of ephedrine, worth 2.1, through the mail center. You recall we said we deployed all of the baggage scanners and scanners at the mail centers. Because those who are involved in illegal trade will use every possible means of subverting and circumventing measures that we put in place. So we are in discussions with the Southern Post Offices and other entities that are involved in mail couriers that would have to have the capability of taking some of these things as they come through their entities. But I also want to indicate that on the 11th we stopped also ammunition coming through Ortega through the rugged scan, which was hidden in a bag. We also indicated in our previous meeting that we saw some explosives coming through Zimbabwe with different reports. These are the things that we are doing, and gold, if you recall. Equally, we stopped a passenger who was carrying to himself and his body 3.2 million in cash and $43,000 in cash, who we have opened a criminal case. He tried to bribe our officer by giving him 10,000 rand. So it has to be inculcated a culture that the country comes first, not money, because once these things come through, they become an issue in people's thinking that they're making easy money. also stopped a Mozambican passenger from Igombo who was carrying cocaine to the value of close to a million. Chapter 7, we speak about customs in ensuring that our staff is adequately equipped and filled. These are some of the measures that we can gloat and be proud of, but these are small measures, but certainly as we predicate and strengthen, we'll be able to deal with issues. We also want to improve control and flow of goods through our ports of entry so that the goods reach the destinations on time. But it's also important that we detect and manage risk accurately. What is key here, we need also to enhance and up the ante on intelligence capability, that we have an ability to see when things are sent to our country ahead of time. So what it means here is that we need to strengthen the role of our technology and the people being at the center of what we do. But we also need to develop a highly effective and inspection audit team. This is the crux, this is the marrow and the bone of what we need to do. Because if we don't have people who are passionate and able to deal with some of these substantive issues, some of these things will come to our ports of entry and of course become a problem. But most importantly, much as we do this thing, we need to increase our stakeholder management. That all those who are involved in the activities that we do, we have a common approach, we speak from the same issue. Chairperson, I want to speak about tax in its components, maximum the tax revenue and compliance. We've spoken at broadly that it is important that we have South African taxpayers that are compliant and that the tax morality becomes a mantra and the way of life. And then we've said as South leadership that we must maintain a position and a posture that says paying taxes is good, that South Africans must feel that it is patriotic to pay our taxes. What it means therefore that we need to develop a targeted initiative to address small and medium enterprises non-compliance, so that those who enter for the first time in the mainstream of the economy also play their major role in paying their taxes and making their entry into the business world much easier. But we also note with concern that much as we deal with compliance and maximizing revenue and compliance, we need to launch a comprehensive approach to address high net worth individuals and the tax end. It is said, according to literature that we have, wealth literature documents, that South Africa has the highest per capita richest people in the world. And therefore, it is said, therefore, that we have an opportunity that we could harness and benefit in terms of getting more tax-compliant citizens in South Africa. And therefore, for this purpose, we need to beef up the team. International best practices for high net worth, you need to have 6 to 100 people. We have the opposite, so we need to up the ante in this respect. Especially during this difficult time, it's important, therefore, that once we are looking for revenue resources, that we also tap into the high net worth individuals. We have reported to ourselves that we wanted to expand that base road and profit shifting teams and enforce penalties on large corporations. To this effect, we can confirm that we have already recruited additional qualified 23 staff members. Because this is an issue that is affecting international communities and countries, and therefore we cannot be on the margin of such an important phenomenon. And we know that the committee is seized in addressing some of these issues together with ourselves. Chairperson and members of the committee, we also need to build capacity and capability to enable audit and enforcement and deal with debt. Because large corporations, by their nature, at times they don't pay their tax, and therefore the debt book increases, and therefore it's subjugated, therefore that we reduce the debt book to a minimal and manageable level. But what is key in everything that was said is the human element. That without a passionate, energized staff, it is not going to be possible. Therefore, we need to improve data management and case selection and effectiveness and the training of our people. I then want to move into a customer and a centric approach with respect to some of the issues that are at the center of the operating model that we want to, that has been approved and we are embarking upon. So that we deliver consistently effective service by embedding a customer essential approach. I think it is important to take a pause to indicate that we need to take the taxpayer and the traders as our key important players, that we treat them properly and with respect, but with firmness that deserves that when they are not compliant and we take the consequent measures. We also want to maximize efficiency by optimally utilizing people and resources, our call centers properly resourced, our call center should be able to respond to some of many issues that the customers and the taxpayers may raise with us. But it is also important, as I said, that paying taxes school that we increase focus on taxpayer education. We have embarked on this particular roadshow, chapter, and the members, that tax education is key in our country. We need to take tax education to schools so that our children should be able to understand that the country's survival and the importance of the economy also hinges in their citizenship and patriotic approach, that they learn as early as possible that taxes are important. We do interact with the Department of Education in this respect. The footprint is still small, but we believe that tax education becomes primary. We want also to amplify our service channel network for the future, and we also want to reduce volume by automating and migrating activity. Providing high quality and efficient customer service is at the center of what we do. But it's also important to indicate that because we have already migrated to a point wherein most South Africans, most of our people are technology savvy, and the young generation in particular, at one point or the other, as we migrate in modernizing SARS, that we should have applications on our cell phones, which will help such a taxpayer to be able to file using their cell phone. But of course, security being underpinned by it. The next component is people and operations. We want to develop a high-performance culture in operations. We need to refine performance management and implement talent strategy. We need to be able to have an ability in our operating model wherein we are able to identify talent within the organization, so that it addresses the issue of performance and succession. And we need to align resources with strategic priorities where they will have the largest impact. And this is the resource that we have, an asset that we have in our people, supported by the technology that we have already developed over years. We want also to develop capabilities, including a tax research institute and data analytics. We did indicate to yourself, Chair and members of the committee, that SARS as an institute of state, we are responsible for releasing trade statistics. It is about time that we have think tank that is able to do data analytics on the trade statistics to inform and influence policy, and also be able to influence our industrialists as to which are the opportunities that exist. And that, by and large, which means therefore we are creating platforms to have interesting Department of Trade, have discussions with FedSA, have discussions with the Reserve Bank, but at a very high level also discuss with our colleagues in the National Treasury, again, we indicate that trade statistics play a pivotal role in our lives. Finally, we want to optimize our existing processes and supporting data architecture to meet business needs. That's on operations level. There for some time, perhaps convoluted the role of IT, wherein IT became wagging the dog instead of the dog wagging the tail. And for the purpose of this process, we are saying we need also to subscribe to best practices. Information services and technology is key, and we are saying fit for purpose IT systems wherein business indicates what it is that it requires IT to support it with, the implementation of global best practices and strengthening of big data capability. We are quite mindful that I think 2 weeks ago we had information that IRS in the United States were hacked, and therefore cybersecurity becomes key. Much as we deal with technology today, but also we need also to strengthen our capability that we can save other taxpayer information and data. So in the field of analytics and data, an IT will also enhance that footprint. The operating model was launched on the 18th of this month to allow our organization to be transformed and our strategy to be executed. Chapter and members of the committee, the revised SARS operating model is a bridge between the old and the new. We are saying we take cognizance of the good things that happened in the past and things that have worked well, and therefore what needs to be done is to strengthen and stratify that which is good. In this operating model, there are 4 pillars that would lead to growth, which will address the structural issues, is that there will be a field of our skills and people will be accountable. We'll have clarified decision rights with single point of accountability. The issue of governance. Simple, effective governance structure and procedures must be enhanced. We should be value-based when we are customer-centric. We take value to our taxpayer, high-performance culture for employees, and of course continuous improvement. We need therefore a learning organization. We need also to increase the capabilities of our staff, including technology that enhances what we do, focus on employee development, using a tech and customer expertise. All this put together will give us an organizational structure that is balanced, aligned with the strategic objective and the mandate, which is effective and efficient collection of revenue. Chairperson, allow me therefore to slightly speak broadly about the new structure. The new structure will be led by two components, tax and customs. In tax, we have business and individual. These are the pillars of what the mandate of SARS is all about. The tax and customs and excise units will drive our strategic agenda, but they will be supported by the two components, which are enabled by digital information service technology and enforcement. But the enablers in terms of corporate support will be our finance, strategy and communication, human resource, human capital and development, and legal counsel. These four form the basis upon which we make our operating model to become a reality. But we're also cognizant of the fact that SARS must also move with times, that we'll have to institute what is called the Tax and Customs Excise Institute, which will become a think tank within SARS. So we're able to be able to interrogate the data that we churn and we serve and we share with other players in the market and in the economy. Finally, Chair, what are the next steps? If you look into the slide that we gave you in page 2, slide number 3, that says the implementation. What we're going to do? The final slide that we have here seeks to address the following. That the operating model review of SARS will go through a transition to align itself to the new operating model and be able to view the core mandate of SARS and indicate that they will not change because ours is the collection of revenue efficient and effectively so. And we minimize as much disruption as possible that may come through the process. The full transition into an operating model that works for SARS will be the success of much as we start feeling and dealing with the issues of addressing the new operating model. We'll be able to finalize the detailed transformation plan, prioritize the implementation solution, and commence with the implementation. On the ICT component and modernization, SARS has taken in all the Gartner recommendations on board, and Gartner has recently been appointed to conduct phase 2 of IT renewal process. And the phase 2 program consists of 7 strategic objectives, projects that will be delivered and rolled out during the next 18 months. We'll also appoint a new chief officer, digital information, something that we did not have. A detailed return on investment analysis on the modernization expenditure is to be conducted. This chairperson, change management is central to both reviews. We'll ensure that all key stakeholders, including yourselves, including the SARS employees, are engaged in the process to embrace the changes that we put, where to engage and embed. Thank you very much, chairperson.
Members? Thank you very much, Chair, for the input. Comprehensive, and it relates to what has been presented earlier on. It shows that SARS is on board. Before I come to other issues, I want to know whether the issues that were recommended by the Davis Tech Committee in relation to tax matters has been incorporated in the plans of SARS. For argument's sake, the Davis Tax Committee has raised issues, for instance, in terms of multinationals going for lower tax havens, for instance, to avoid tax. They related to corporations abusing tax systems. For instance, the example of putting money in motion. That's issues that we want to look at. They also suggested that you look at carbon tax as an area. And one of the issues that I know Floyd will say is tax morality. Maybe there should be a program that does look at tax morality. It's not tax illegality, it's tax morality. Things that we believe generally politicians are not morally sound to implement, even if they are legal in their conduct. But I want to come to the issue of the culture of payment. The culture of payment, Honorable Krishna, it's not as easy as said. For instance, I want to make an example. My sister just told me the other day, I come from a small town called Heilbronn. So the other time we were discussing generally about how people avoid going to clinic or to do HIV test because they feel that when coming to a clinic it's written HIV medication, you know, so there's this queue. Yeah, that's what she was just saying to me. So young people were dying in that number because they have to go to the clinic, but how it's put discourages them to go there. So I was thinking creatively. Because he said, now the clinics have done something very interesting. When you go to town, people normally walk and cross a small river in my hometown. They put a mobile clinic where you can quickly test yourself. You know, it's quite a long queue. Not many people. It's not in the eyes of everybody. So you can imagine if I'm not so clever about the issue. But it's not my own choice, yes. Yes, but it is. Come on, don't start a fight with Floyd today. Now, you know, it's there in a space where I can do that. You know, here in Parliament, the way they do it, you become afraid to go to a desk where everybody sees you. It says, check a star, and everybody sees you. They say, no, she doesn't understand the word, and she goes there. It is in such places, maybe closer to restaurants or shopping centers, where it's not so intrusive to go and people say, oh, she doesn't understand the word about text messages. You know, but I still maintain people who are not tech compliant, it's not your average illiterate. Text matters themselves are complicated, and it's not that people doesn't want to comply. So we should think about so that tomorrow we don't accuse Floyd and everybody else and me that we did not say that when we did not even understand how these things work. I still believe we're being hard on people. You know, I'm a Christian, so I take 50 different years. And I still believe part of education is to broker deals with people that will make it easier for them to understand, so that they don't develop an attitude to taxation itself. We make, and in your word, Commissioner, it's cool to say that. That in itself needs to have cool mechanisms, so that it's not seen as being punitive. So, other things that it's the wealth test. Have we considered to tax people on the basis of the wealth they have? I know it's going to create a lot of discussions. It's my money, I'm ready, blah, blah, blah. But the reality of the matter is that maybe we can incentivize those who contribute. I don't know. I don't have ideas of the GTI can come with creative ideas on how to incentivize the wealthy to contribute more so that there's different tax brackets for the wealth. So that they understand the social responsibility that comes with that. I don't know what can incentives we can bring. The mind taxes, Chair, because the people who consume the largest energy, who do a lot of environmental damage, is the mining sector. That's the truth of the matter. So we need a different approach to that, to our Honorable Chair. That's basically my humble submission for the day. Especially when the G coefficient is, the G coefficient is not so good after the 14 rand to the dollar. We want radical, I hope I covered this one, radical approach to. So not so, so I feel radical.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Commissioner, for the report. As I said to you earlier, I'm pleased that your foot has healed since our last meeting, and so we can go out there. If we're not going to be boxing, we'll be playing rugby or something equally adversarial. You won't be, okay. Commissioner, you've a couple of times in the presentation talked about customer-centric approach, deliver consistent service and so on. And in Satwell, you talk about the new business model. Now, one of the biggest scandals to hit you, your organization, has been your spy unit. I forget what the official name is. And there have been various reports out on that. And the one that we're all waiting eagerly to see is the KPMG report. And we haven't yet had sight of that. But I assume, Commissioner, that the recommendations and the comment in that report have been included in your new business model of some sort. Or is that report so recent that its impact hasn't been included here? As I say, we don't know what it contains, so we don't know whether it should or shouldn't be affecting the structure of your new business model. So we're hoping to see that soon. We know that you referred it to the minister. I'm not sure why, because I'm sure you didn't refer this report to the minister before you came here. So the minister doesn't hear everything that you have, every document you have. But it's probably passing the buck, and you're probably entitled to pass the buck. But we're hoping to see that report very, very soon. So the question really is, has the content of that report impacted on the new business model? And will it indeed see this goal to deliver consistent, effective service and customer-centric approach? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Commissioner, the first thing that I wanted to know is that how far are we at SARS in terms of percentage with our annual performance plan? Because this is supposed to be the quarterly report. And also, I would like you to comment on whether some of the factors and some of the things that are currently happening, where they have an impact, such as the decline of the rent, the depreciation of the rand, the trading, is actually, I think today is about 10 rand to a dollar. And I think that's what's going to be important for us to know. And the other one that has always troubled me is that it is to get a definite answer of what is SARS' definition of a high wealth individual. And I'll tell you why. Because I think there is a very strong concentration on those that are between the brackets of 500,000 to 1,000 rand a year, and yet your real upper end individuals, I don't get the sense that we are really dealing with those, because if you're talking about those that brackets of 500,000 to about 1.2 or whatever. Those people, you will actually find that they have their primary residence, they have their car, and it just ends there, and they have their children who are probably at a private school or something like that. And at the end of the day, we are squeezing those in particular, but I'm not saying that's what you are doing, and that's the sense that I'm getting. This is why I would like to get a definition of how do we define high worth, you know, individuals in South, I mean, SARS defines high worth individuals in South Africa. And finally, during that oversight visit in Durban, something that came very strongly was that it doesn't seem to be a very strong intergovernmental relations with the other players, because you are not the only players there. You have your Transnet, you have all these people, and if these people are not taking, they are playing their part in terms of assisting SARS to, you know, in all strategy to improve our performance in the area of excise and customs duty, I don't think we'll be able to go that far. Now, I wanted you to know what is the strategy in terms of IDR coordination and bringing all those strategic stakeholders you know, in excise and customs duty, you know, to actually have the same agenda and so forth. So I think that should be it from me. Thank you.
Uh,
Thank you, Chair. This is my first SAR quarterly report, and I can't help drawing a conclusion that the report appears to be sort of designed to divert from the real issues or the meat and potatoes of the core business of SAR. So my primary question would be, in the second quarter 2015 Q2, what are the revenue targets? Were those revenue targets met? And is there a shortfall in revenue collection given the relatively slow economic growth and the now distinct possibility that the economic growth may well dip below the 2% level which was projected in the budget? I would have expected that to be the core of the SARS quarterly report.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was really saying to the Commissioner that we had gotten a letter to him, but it looks like he has not received that letter concerning the confirmation in the Farm Commission report that Lonmin transferred 1.3 billion to a non-existent company in Bermuda. 1.3 billion, and that was information sourced and confirmed under oath, and the report also made some specific recommendations, and I wanted to know what will be SARS action and follow up on that aggressive tax avoidance by Lonmin. That is the specific case that will relate to. Now, the National Treasury in the last meeting of the Standing Committee was pointed to the fact that it looks like this more money that is transferred to Luxembourg than to Germany. And it's part of the problem because Luxembourg is classified as the tax havens. And we do not have as much substantial trade with that territory. And because you are saying, Commissioner, that you deal with the trade statistics, you compile trade, maybe you must have an illustration of who do we trade with? Where does money from South Africa go to? What is the destination of South Africa's resources? I think I'm giving an indication of the extent and level of tax avoidance. But the third issue is, I think you must pay attention to these professional companies, or audit firms, that audit books of huge multinational corporations. Because as a matter of fact, they cook those books. I know of the company that audits Lonmin, we got information that was sent to us that the top management says that no, there's lots of questionable things there, but just give them a clean audit, like everything is fine. And the tax that we collect, we rely on Lonmin telling us that this is the profit that we need. And then we rely on that. I think there must be a different mechanism that is designed to deal with the books of huge multinational corporations. I think that can help you to generate a maximum revenue from those multinational corporations. But also, we appreciate that there begin to be some practical action on the BEPS process. But I'm still not convinced that we've got a solid and sound legislative basis and framework. Like, it's fluid. Like, it's not clear because in some instances, government representatives say that tax avoidance is not illegal, sometimes it's illegal, depending on who is speaking. Like, we have asked that question many times, like the deputy president at that time says, no, it's not illegal, it's an ethical issue. National Treasury comes and says, no, actually, in terms of Article 7 of the Tax Administration Act, is illegal. So there must be some certainty in terms of what exactly are you dealing with when you're dealing with the profit shifting. I think and the simple request that we have made a submission to the Debtors Committee that let us have a concrete unit legislation that says that tax avoidance is illegal, particularly intra company trade, because in most instances it's not for genuine purposes, it's about shifting profits in terms of what should happen. The very last issue is with regard to customs. I understand there's a private company owned by Bidvest called SACD which will seize containers. I don't know if you're concerned about that. Unfortunately, I couldn't come to the bank and kept on a site visit. But SACD receives containers. I think there's supposed to be a staff official in SACD terminal. But I can tell you as a matter of fact that there are lots of containers that pass there without having been opened, without anyone knowing what are the contents of those containers. We tell them that they are the slips from Guangzhou in China, everything else that is inside there was costing an average of 500 rand each. And then you pay whatever amount you want to pay. I don't agree that there should ever be a private company that should receive containers from outside the counter, because the private companies are there for profit. They can take any money and ignore security concerns and ignore customs collections and all these other things. I don't know what is the capacity of those to deal with the private receivers of containers from outside. The last issue, which may be in your part as part of your intervention, is how do you deal with the cash traders, like people who only use cash? Like, we are operating in that space. But there are lots of people who use cash and can't trace their money. You do not know how much money they have where else. I know there are lots of role players who now are moving away from the banking system because they want to not pay tax. So those are some of the issues that we have to talk to. So if there is something else we'll talk to later on. So Tandy didn't have a number for the initial.
Say anything? Or just recover your mind. Fine. So the first thing is, I think it's correct actually. And maybe Cindy, you need to write formal later, because we've covered this card. It applies to all entities that appear before us. What we didn't want to do, we said this the last time, is to look at what your goals were for the quarter concerned. And how far. Tandy, are you listening? Because it's a method we agreed on, right? All entities, not even SARS, right? We started the FAC, but we told them that report must go back. Right? Okay. No, the thing is, comrade colleagues, all entities, wherever they are, whether it's a South African, whether it's a Reserve Bank or SARS, have to do the same things, Cindy. I mean, this is a norm in Parliament. They have to tell what it is they plan to achieve in that quarter and what percentage of the performance, I'm sure you've got somewhere, they've achieved. You have to do in any case, presumably for your minister and for the cabinet, because the quarterly report. Right? So I'm sure the information is there. So I think if it's there, easily accessible, that's the key thing we're looking at. And I think it's correct to say that we're particularly concerned about it in the case of SARS now, more specifically, because of the economic downturn and the stress on dividends. So I think Makosi and Dave both picked up on that. Then the question is a more general one, Commissioner. I don't know enough about tax and so on, but in the circumstances we find ourselves in, we see all the things you're proposing, right, to ensure we have more revenue. And we know that unless the economy grows, which is not really your responsibility alone, you can propose ideas, it's our collective responsibility as a country. But what are, other things apart from what you've said? Maybe drawing on lessons you can draw from other countries in similar situations that can be done to ensure we get the revenue we do. Related to that is the question of, tax compliance is a persistent theme of SARS. Now, I think I've asked this before, but maybe you should remind us. Is there a way you can tell what percentage of people who should be paying taxes pay taxes they're supposed to? And how does this compare to the global norm? And how does this compare to the norm in developing countries? In other words, my sense, Krishna, reading the Business Day and so on, is that we've been doing reasonably well over the last few years in upping the percentages of people paying tax. In fact, that's something accredited by a wide range of independent experts and so on. But one might be interested in some figures. I really like what you think about cell phones, I mean, I know the security issues. It applies equally. I mean, you're talking about the U.S. revenue. I didn't know that, by the way. Was it a big story in the local press?
Mr. That's amazing, right? You know, I like to think about the old home. You know, I've made a different road previously, and I must tell you, I was overwhelmed by what you can do with a cell phone. Making calls is a minor thing. It's just an ordinary Nokia phone. What does performance in Kenya and Bolivia and so on? I'm amazed, you know, what can be done with a cell phone. Let me just give you an insight. This is important, right? I went to a conference where they explained, right? It's not entirely relevant, but it shows the wonder of the cell phone, actually, and how it can boost economic growth, get a broadband story in that. But, you know, it's very simple. What this guy was explaining 2 or 3 years ago was that the refugees from Syria going to Lebanon, they don't give them a bag of mealy meal or powdered milk and so on. Every Friday from Washington or whatever, they get $20 or $30 on a cell phone. Nokia cheap cell phone, right? That thing, they go to the local trader in Lebanon and buy milk and bread. Now, what are the advantages? One, corruption gets dramatically reduced. Because, you know, if Oxfam chooses to give money to certain countries, they work out, if you want to give 100 grand, you'll raise 1,500 grand. Because so much of money goes to the chapter, the lab, the docks people, politicians, the local feudal lord, in do not below him, etc. It's usually him, right? And what gets to the poor? Now, here, the money comes directly to you. That's one advantage. Secondly, you can stimulate the local industry. Those people are local retail. Those people are fed up having you there. They're poor countries. But you go and buy in the local shop. Thirdly, what you're doing is not getting maize produced in the US or in Europe. It's locally produced. So you know, all those advantages. So I really like what you're saying about the cell phone. I think the vulnerability you speak of, vulnerabilities of ICT in general, no matter what form, whether it's the iPad or the MacBook Air or whatever people use. On the issue of customs and income, you talk about 15-20%, right? That is your current revenue. I'm not understanding, Commissioner. Is that the current revenue you're raising? And by your efforts, what is your aim to up that? In other words, make it 30% or 40%, I don't know. And if you do that, does that mean that you've got some targets over the next 3 to 5 years? Nothing's going to happen overnight. On debts, as you know, I want to tell the committee, I don't know what to do with debt. Now, the 11th is the date we set for all the committees coming together. I'm battling to get them. Remember, people propose lots of things, and then they leave it to me. Now, you've proposed science and technology. You've proposed labor. You've proposed various other committees, right? Now, even getting the 3 committees together, we were going to call you on the 11th, right? Now, I got an email this morning saying that public here is the one committee. The other committee chair doesn't respond. The other 3 committees are not coming back to us. So I don't know what to do about the 11th of September, because we've set it for a whole day, Cynthia, I hope you please them, a whole day from to Friday. Remember, people put a lot of ideas, so now we have these Friday. People have the consequences. It's from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock on Friday the 11th. So tentatively, sometime between the 11th of September this year and 2019, we will have this thing. We can bring all the 9 committees that you people wanted together. I think you just go for 3 committees and do it and move forward. But on BEPS, we are very much on course, except that we can't get the other committees to come on the 11th. So maybe that is the 12th or something. I don't know. But we'll have to do it sometime or the other. Now, the next thing I want to say, okay, I'll drop the answer because it's eclipsed by what other people are saying. I'm not even clear what I'm asking. So let's just leave it for now. Let me think, see, well, it's true. Yeah, okay, thank you.
Chairperson and members, honorable members, thank you very much. We have taken notes of the comments and clarifications that you seek from us. Without getting in any order of the manner in which the questions came from, certainly we take cognizance of the fact that that is a major issue. And the multinationals in particular, and profit shifting from high tax to low tax havens is a big problem. But it's not a South African problem, only an international problem. And certainly, SARC sits in some of the OECD meetings and World Customs Organization, and we have a team that is seized with these issues. We take the issue of BEPS very seriously. because it has a huge impact on our tax base and it has a serious impact on a tax gap. Economists and analysts will say, what's the tax gap of Africa? That's what we assist with. We are a revenue collection, and therefore we need to be collecting every revenue. And therefore I take cognizance of the question that you raised there. But certainly, as the sum total of the issue that we assist with, we need to prioritize the processes. I'll certainly come back to the questions or two. What are the issues? The issue of carbon tax is come from a policy perspective. We need to implement the tax that we need to generate. Tax morality. Tax morality is not a cliche, it's a reality of life. And certainly something that the country must also discuss and be able to create traction in respect to how do we deal with issues of tax and tax payment across both individual and businesses. But you'll recall, Chair, members of the committee, that we as revenue administration, our key mandate is a collection. But the collection must therefore be underpinned by South Africans playing their moral statutory requirements of paying tax. It's not easy. And we take cognizance of the fact that much as we have a quantum of people who are in the tax base, some of them will not be compliant with the law. And therefore the tax administrations give us the latitude to put the enforcement arm into it that people must pay their taxes. But it's a bigger debate than because we have other institutions which we're sitting with. For example, there's a tax Indaba that is there, SAICA, SAIPA, all those institutions, and the tax practitioners. The message that must go across is that we need to be able to broaden our tax education. Because it's not in the absence of telling the people what is it that they need to pay for and where the tax revenues will come from. But certainly, we take cognizance of the fact that the culture of payment comes from a member of the committee here. Some people are fearful of paying tax, but what we have done is that we have what you call mobile tax units, which are an avenue towards where people can, without going to South Office, can go to a mobile tax unit. It's not intrusive, it's one-to-one. But I think when we look at the tax matter, it should not be something that people are fearful of. We think much broader than the tax, mobile tax unit. We are saying in the near future, people should be able to go to a kiosk in the mall, where during the filing tax period, we are able to sit and be able to help like any other institution. And those are the initiatives that we're putting forth. Mine tax, the economy of South Africa in the main for a number of years, the base of our economy was in mining, followed by agriculture, but certainly it's declining in the mining sector, but it still plays a pivotal role. Every avenue of the sector is liable to pay tax. So there is no sector of the economy that we live in outside brackets. So we do liaise with the taxpayers across the different tax brackets that we have. So certainly we want to give assurance that those who are in the mainstream of the economy are affected one or the other by ourselves. Mr. Lee did indicate that, thanks for asking about my health. Thank you very much. We are indeed a customer eccentric. Certainly, if my health was not good, I would not be here. But my team would be here. and thanks for the concern. Customer eccentric is the name of the game. The taxpayer and the trader are key components. If we don't have taxpayers and traders who are compliant, therefore that which has been set as a target becomes a mirage we won't achieve. And certainly we want to embrace a culture that says all the 14,000 men and women in South must treat the taxpayer and the trader very well and be able to be not arrogant, not aggressive, but be able to respond to the questions, the concerns raised by the taxpayer. But of course, firmness must be there, that compliance must be there. You spoke about the unfortunate past, which certainly none of us would like to go back to, the spy unit, whatever it was called. We are an entity of state whose mandate is to deal with the revenue collection, not any other thing. But certainly, from our perspective, it's a part that perhaps we'll have to look at and say never in our time should be happen. Certainly, we are proud that we're dealing with issues of governance, with the issues of ethics, compliance in terms of ethics and standards of what the SARS option is supposed to be doing. Following on those who are not compliant, of course, enforcement takes place. With respect to the report that we are referring to, the KPMG report, Certainly, I want to indicate to the committee that the KPMG report is not a panacea of what we are looking for. It's part and parcel of giving us on issues of governance, ethics, and a number of things. So it was working in conjunction with other entities in respect to the future that we want to build. The impact it has on the operating model is still very early. Of course, key that we need to understand and also convey here is that the operating model is about a few days old since it was announced, and therefore there will be key things that will pick up and be able to address as we go up to drill this. The operating model is not implemented overnight. It takes its own process, and to go through a process of refinement. And certainly, as you have indicated, that I'm not passing the buck in this respect, given, of course, the issues that the KPMG report, amongst others, on the governance issues, on the issues that might have impact on the old road unit, is purview of the minister. I am the accounting officer, but equally the minister has a role to play because he's a political executive authority in this respect. I do not want to have such that is sitting in the media on issues that has nothing to do with his mandate. Mine is to create an environment wherein the taxpayer has confidence that to do what is statutory agreed upon. SARS performance. In it, I do agree with both member of the committee, Member Kosi, and Mr. David Aminier. I think there was a miscommunication in terms of what we're supposed to do, but we are prepared to substantively report on the quarter report, and in my communique with the team that liaises with the committee. My understanding is that we need to give you key operational highlights based on the quarterly report for 2015-2016. And I can confirm you that we do have that report. As and when the committee wants that report, we'll share with you. But certainly, let me give you the highlights so to address a number of things. With respect to revenue collection, which is key, we have a target of 1.1 trillion, which has been set for SARS to be able to achieve in the 2015-2016. This is a method that was used. That's part of our key deliverable. It's part of the, what call it is something that is non-negotiable. That's what makes the relationship between us and the committee and the minister. With your permission, Chair, our revenue collection for quarter one was 202.1 billion, or 0.9% below the target. Macroeconomic reasons. And therefore, we'll be able to get these reports as and when we get, these are the highlights that I'm able to extract, as we speak. But certainly, the performance is a factor of how the economy performs. And we are not in any position to say that the target is not achievable, but it's a factor of, as the current indicator, the rand is sitting at 14, and then it's slided down to 13. So there is that ping-pong philosophy, and swinging one or the other. But economists in their nature will say the manner in which the rand has slipped down might be helping the exporters. It all depends as to where we sit in the economy. It might become an impediment in terms of certain sectors of the economy. But for me, as a SARS officer and a SARS official, the importance of the bottom line as to whether we'll be able to derive revenues from the performance of the economy. Second, we'll also look into the mining sector, the losses, and some of the sectors of the economy closing up. And therefore, these are the concerns that we have, whether this 1.1 or 1.08 trillion dollars is trillion rand is achievable. But I must indicate also the chair of the committee that the factor of the economy performance and us achieving is a measure that we continuously, on a monthly basis, through the revenue steering committee, that we measure. That's what SARS is supposed to be. And that's what we report here. And therefore, we shall, in the next encounter with yourselves, fully prepared for this encounter, give you a fully-fledged report, not cherry-picking what the commissioner wants to share with you. But I certainly we agree with you on this matter. And certainly we have a report. We do.
Yes. Sorry about this. Recently, this is not something we want to discuss, Commissioner. You know what a quarterly report is. It's been to say this is what you try to achieve. This is how far you've got. You're one of the better performing institutions, so I think it's easier for you to do it. So there's no debate about it. Adam, can you write a formal letter to all the institutions and show it to them, to remind them, because they're not going to come to this community. A quarterly report is a quarterly report, Commissioner.
The way you report to the minister, who then reports to cabinet, is the way it's done here. There's nothing to debate. You have to tell us.
This is Cindy. Can you also contact all the entities we work with you and clarify this thing? You don't want this to have to happen again. A quarterly report is a quarterly report. There are targets you have, and you've got to tell us wherever you are, how far you've got. It's not about choosing certain things. We discussed this before. So can you give us a copy of that? And can we just do it now? Right? Okay. Sorry, David and Sandy.
Sorry, I don't want you to get it wrong. I mean, we, first of all, I wonder if the Commission could just clarify. We're dealing with 2015 quarter two. What was the target? The shortfall was 2.1 billion, which is 0.9% below, or was the target 2.1 billion and the shortfall? I think we just need to be absolutely clear. We don't want any... Yeah. So, 2015 quarter two, the top quarter... Quarter one. What was the target? What was the shortfall? And what is the percentage shortfall?
Okay, I want to make a suggestion. The key performance target is outlined in government and the reporting mechanisms that have been there. Were not there before in Parliament, Cindy. So I suggest that when we follow the quarterly report mechanism that has been there, maybe we should borrow in a way from how Commissioner you do it on a quarterly basis to cabinet. You know, the green, the orange, and you know, and we know the sensitivities of other issues. Maybe they will, in advance there will be discussion with the chair on that one, because that one also has very intensive information. That, for instance, that's being used by the appropriations committee on a regular basis. So maybe there should be two sections to it. There will be the one that deals with the financial reporting. I don't know, is that the one we want? And the one that will seek to keep up on the because it will inform the performance output. When we look at that, then it will make it easier for us to track key performance areas based on the new operating model that has been put in place. And invite also the budget office, because some of the information is not to indulge, especially when the documentation comes in the morning. So to I think if a commissioner, you hear where I'm going, to make it possible for us to go through that, because that one will involve tax retainment, blah blah blah. And then come the sensitive ones in terms of the, you know, whether the collection targets are met or not, and that debate in itself, when we check it, we see the quota will not necessarily translate into the actual target that you get at the end of the financial year. But if we want to do that, then it will want us also to look at the performance other men, and it will actually makes us to meet on Saturday now. That's when Sunday also comes in.
Yeah, just a suggestion that might help us get through. It's clear that the Commissioner has the figures here. It might be useful if we could just ask the Committee Secretary to immediately copy them so that there can be no misunderstanding about the data, which we as a committee wouldn't want to know. And quarter one and quarter two should be available.
Focusing on one quarter, David, and that's it. There's nothing to discuss there. We look at each quarter to the extent we can, and when the legislation, this committee never did before, for what it's worth, David said will confirm, for what it's worth, one quarter, I think we're not going to discuss this thing again. I don't think there's a deliberate attempt on part of the commissioner to, like, as you've implied, is distracting for the issues. I think if anything, the Commissioner's self-interest and his institute is to actually show you that given the economic challenges, they're doing reasonably well, if not better than reasonably well. So I don't buy the David, but we can agree to disagree. However,
it wasn't my intention to
No, no, it was the effect. Well, yeah, but all right, fine, whatever. Let's agree to disagree. Okay, right.
So you should allow David to do this. Because we want him to protest his facts, and then, you know, we can take go to town for the whole day. You know?
No, it's fine. It's
okay.
I also have to share something. So, now let me put this to you. We've agreed now, I'll be minimizing it, right, that all organizations, once again, will have to do a quarterly report the way you have to do a quarterly report. I don't, tell me, to be quite frank, before 2009, before the Zuma administration performance agreements with ministers, I think it's really late, entities appeared before us. We did the same. We told them, we used different terms in those days, right? But what's the PFMATM also, it helped us. We said, so it was ESCOM and other public enterprises, or the NPA in Justice, or CELDA and local government. We said, but CELDA we only brought before our committee for that reason. But the demarcation board, what were your targets for the quarter? This is a quarter report. How far did you get? Where you didn't get what you were supposed to get? Why didn't you get it? What are you going to do about getting it? And can you come next time and tell us what you've done in the last... So there's nothing phenomenally new to post 2009. In fact, at one stage I recall, for what it's worth, totally I've forgotten. The President said he'll put a key performance, the performance agreement with the ministers on the website. Right? And I recall when I was playing that role, I appeared before the committee. To the best of my knowledge, somehow or the other, they had the key performance indicator. So the performance agreement with the President, Officer Kero at the time, and I was the main person responsible for the ministry to report to Parliament. And we used that at least once or twice when the Chief Service was checked. So basically, these are things that should be hidden. Because, the thing is, I realize what you're saying. So that's for them to handle. I don't want to be involved in anything that the members in a committee when it comes to the quarterly report, unless there's an exceptional circumstance stated that you don't know. So there are things, presumably, and any executive, including in Sweden, to use one example, right, in the social democracy, will keep certain things to itself. They market sensitive or whatever, or politically sensitive in some way. There's no problem about that. What we're saying, I think what Andy is saying, Commissioner, is what I agree with. That you do the quarterly report anyway, you've got to decide what is completely problematic to reveal in the public domain. So let's just be doing it for us. I don't want to be involved. I mean, I think the committee should have... There's nothing profound in what we say. It's been done for the last 15 years in different forms by different committees. So we're done with this. I'm going to believe the point. Okay, let's move on. I think what we can do is see if we can get it now, but also we can distribute it. And then you can put the question. Then we get the next quarter. I don't think he's saying anything that you don't understand here with the due respect to you. Yeah, he explained it to you. What's the problem? It's, unless you're questioning the veracity of it. He's saying that, I think it's, you said it's 2.1 billion below your target. That constitutes, is it 0.9% or 1.9%? And hey, that's better than you can imagine anywhere in the world, the current economic constraints to have. Oh, dear. All right, just give it to him again. That's it. Sorry? Yeah, quarterly targets, right? Just give it to him again and that's it, because you haven't got it. And are you getting the copy? Yeah, good. Okay, one more time. Is he slow? Right. What can I do? I didn't choose him. He's not my party. No, this time, because it's not a written, thing, no, rather give him the benefit of the doubt as a chair, meaning it's not written and given as it should have been, right? And it came this morning for the reasons I explained. Therefore, once again, can you explain to slow MP in this committee what it is that you're saying?
Chairperson. Yes, listen, thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. What I want to commit to yourself is that we'll send the report to yourself today without fail to be sent into your office, and so the members can have the quarterly report. But certainly to respond to the first quarter, the printed first quarter target was 244.9 billion. What we achieved was 242.9 billion. Now, what it means, therefore, there was a shortfall of 2.094 billion. It could have been worse, Chairperson. Now, I'm saying this with the respect that we, this ministry has. Had we not put as such senior leadership measures and initiatives, that amount would have been close to 5 billion. But also we need to juxtapose this with the economic performance of our country. Certainly the current situation that we speak about we'll be able to indicate later. But for purposes of the committee, we work on specific targets that we want to indicate to ourselves, because otherwise we'll be missing the point of our mandate in existence. That is also dissected in terms of the tax types, where we've better achieved, where we failed, and the risk, and therefore we track in the second quarter how best to ameliorate the risks. What we are going to do, therefore, the performance of the key highlights, the revenue that we want to derive over a quarterly period. I must also emphasize that perhaps it might be incorrect, but I think from the team that we lead, we have made a commitment that revenue is going to be measured and targeted on a quarterly basis. We're not going to wait until the last quarter and say this is the target that has been set. Otherwise, we'll be failing in terms of being able to deal with the substantive issues of revenue as a factor of how we contribute to the national fiscus. So we have a team, as I've indicated, which is from a high-level senior management that sits in those meetings and does an analysis, understand, look at the macroeconomic position, what are the factors, the industry. So, Chairperson, without belaboring this issue, I sincerely agree with you. As we progress on this journey, we'll give you the quarterly reports as expected of us, and certainly today, without fail, your office will have a copy of this report so that the members in their own time can look at. When we come for the second quarter, they have right to ask for the first quarter, and that's opposite to the second quarter, what has happened and when. Those are the issues that I want to raise with you. But perhaps with your permission, may I ask Mr. Mokwafa to
answer? Basically, I think it's a fuller response. And for what it's worth, I suspect the majority here think that in the circumstances, you've done quite well, actually. And really, I see Linda Ensoy, I hope she's listening, but I can't dictate to her what she writes. But it might be useful to give it to Alan and Linda and any other media person that wants it and have a look at the statement, the figures. You verbalized it, and people who are reporting to the public might not actually get the figures right. So I think it is, once again, a good effort, a very good effort. Thank you. Over to you.
thank you, Commissioner and Chair and members. I just want to actually add on the issue of revenue collection that obviously the situation would have been worse than what it is now. Just maybe highlighting certain examples. We know for a fact the impact of the revenue was on the mining sector and the manufacturing sector. But the things that we have actually done has actually closed the gap much to become smaller. One example is that we actually relooked and find the risk rules on PIT as an example. And since the beginning of the financial year, we've saved 873 million rand, which actually could have been paid out on as a due refund. Yes. 873 million rand was saved where it could have been paid out as undue refund. Because of the refunding of the risk rules that we've done, that is the beginning of this financial year. And this refund actually could have been, we're even looking at the fair side as well, because there is leakage on the other side. So we are not only focusing in collecting, but also focusing in closing the gap where there's opportunities for first start actually to siphon funds from the state. And the commissioner has actually that. In the past, revenue drive was only in the last quarter of the financial year. This year was all made as a decision that it is a day-to-day function, and we run quarterly revenue drives. The first quarter, what is very exciting is the last quarter, which has never happened in the past years. So I think we are pushing hard to try and limit the gap in terms of the revenue.
Christian, you didn't respond here.
My apologies. The issue that was raised as to the definition of the high net worth individual. It's a very very difficult question, but it depends as to which tax administration where the economy sits. Some would have said that high net worth is anybody who earns over $1 million, but it becomes convoluted. But from a tax perspective, high net worth individuals in our environment is those who earn above $7 million and above. But yes, but at the same time, we are dealing, we don't lose sight.
Oh, well, I'm not speaking to the mic, I'm only joking.
I'm sorry, man. We're refining the rules and the definition. But it's not, it's also in fact of the assets that the individual has. Because it has to be an all-encompassing. But at the same time, we don't want to lose sight of those who might be earning below. Because if we do that, we might find people who are dissipating their assets in different forms and shapes. But certainly the definition, as we have indicated, is that it's 7 million and above, but it looks at the asset base and things that they own, yachts, whatever it is, houses, cars, and assets across the whole spectrum. But the high net worth individuals, in their nature, they have mechanisms and efforts of camouflaging their wealth through the proliferation of trusts and other programs and schemes that they put into place. But certainly, we are defining and tightening that aspect of the high net worth individuals. That is why we think we have a lot of high net worth individuals in South Africa. But certainly it's there where an area where we can close the tax gap and be able to deal with it professionally, but we should also be sensitive of there might be cases where if the high net worth, they're not high impact, they're very transparent and treat them with the respect that they deserve. Now, we have
respect. I just want to alert you to something that Timothy has decided, right? And we just haven't even the final slot for that. In our last consideration of the race and multiple, the issue that came up was one of our members raised this, that the emerging black and African middle classes are saying that these tax increases you've got disadvantaging them disproportionately because they're not an established middle class, right? And they're just newly emerging middle classes, the upper classes. And there's no account for the historical legacy issues in this area, as they are in other aspects of the government policy and program. Now, the committee felt that on one hand, whether you are Kumalo or a Pantoda or a Naidu, and you've got huge amounts of money, you've got to pay tax. We're sorry that if you're a Kumalo in particular, maybe to some extent a Naidu, that you haven't paid the same tax as Smith or a Pantoda, right? But given the pressing demand to reduce inequality, and given poor economic growth and so on, we can't say because you're a certain skin color, so you have so much money, you're going to pay lower tax. But on the other hand, there's also a recognition that there are cases to be made for people in certain categories of the newly acquired wealth strata, where consideration might have to be given. So what we've decided is invite National Treasury, one or two institutes rather than individuals, to deal with this matter. Now we're looking for the slot, but I just want to alert you to it. Because one of the members she has said that she's been lobbied and people have come to see her and always bumped into people who raise this issue. So we decided, all right, let's look at this issue. I mean, we've raised this before with you, I think, but I'm just mentioning that this is an issue that's going to come up sometime between now and the 27th of November. Possibly on a Friday, because we're going to have a slot. So we will arrange that today. But do you want to say anything more than you might have said before on that matter?
Sir, I recall vividly when we spoke on the issue of the black tax. And it also linked to the capital gains tax. Because
different to Africans in particular having to cater not to a nuclear family. Yes, that's another component. I saw that in the free press actually. Yeah. In the series of articles, members.
But secondly, sir, on the issues that are raising, when I said SAD must have what you call think tank and have a thought leadership to deal with the issue that perhaps not succumbs cracked in their box and also think outside the areas, because at a tax and customs administration entity, we need to be innovative in the manner with which we deal with some of these issues. The issue of the black tax in particular in the extended family component is an issue that we need to deal with. Certainly, there's also like a far cry on the capital gains tax that the emerging middle class, in particular, have not been benefiting on the issue of property development and what have you, where in oneself. And that's an issue. All of a sudden, where people are penalized, and therefore there's a need for us to look at to how this impacts. But that's an area for a greater debate, and certainly would like to participate in the discussion to find a common approach as to how to address this matter. But certainly when that time comes in November, shall have put our ducks in a row to respond on this matter. So with respect to the issue that the member of the committee, Mr. Shalambo, raised, we as a tax administration, we are not bound to discuss the taxpayer. In particular, it's the confidentiality of information. And therefore, I would request that we deal with this matter because we can deal with the matter off-site, offline, in the manner in which there are problems. But publicly, we don't discuss taxpayers as to who they are and what they owe and how they are fed. But yes, it may, with respect to VAPs and transfer pricing, we take an unequivocal, unambiguous position that we treat all taxpayers the same. And if they've been delinquent, we'll deal with them and address them appropriately. We have a team within the large business, within the finance unit, and operations, but matters of audit of all taxpayers is a matter that we deal with confidentiality. And certainly, with the prescriptions of the law at our disposal and the instruments we deal with all taxpayers in that manner. Certainly, I want to confirm here that we have not received the letter, and certainly I'm saying once the letter is sent to us, all documents of correspondence are treated with the agility and the respect that they deserve, and we'll deal with that matter. The trade debt that the honourable member is raising is that the trade debts are a factor of information that is in our purview, that we think, as far as an institution, that we have not made good use of, because it's a very strong tool and equipment that may inform the National Treasury, Department of Trade, the industry, the captains of the industry, and the economy as to how best, for example. If you look at the trade stats and how we perform with other countries in the region, we have what you call a surplus in terms of trade, but we have a deficit when we deal with the image with large economies. So it is important, therefore, from the perspective of the statistical data, those who deal with the macroeconomic policy, to be able to define areas wherein we could be able to create traction and better our instruments in terms of our exports and imports in that manner. Certainly, it's something that we have started to gain traction with the SFA and, of course, the Reserve Bank, wherein also there is an issue of balance of payments, because if statistical data does not correlate, it does not give a country and economy a better picture. I must indicate that we are also, from a customs perspective, put customs in the forefront. We must have a step forward, and it has been elevated as one of the key components that has to address the issue of revenue collection as a key player, part of the business that we are engendering. I think the issue of the cash economy, some prefer to call it township economy or second economy, the fact of the matter is that addressed properly, it will be able to address the tax gap. And therefore, we are seeing economists and industrialists, we need to be able to harness that potential. It's a huge component of the economy. But there we need to be able to work with the banks, because if it cash, some women may not keep the cash, large amount of cash in their houses, they might want to deposit some. But also we need to also to inculcate a culture that the cash economy in itself has to be tapped and dealt with in the manner that it also contributes to the fiscal. We want to believe that from the think tank and that we establish within SARS, it will also look into the cash economy itself. It's small business, but also the DGI, the banks, must also have that inculcate. Examples in some of the African countries, the cash economy plays a very pivotal role, it's tax compliant. We have done some limited, but we are sending some officials to some of the African countries to be able to learn as to how they harness the cash economy to be in the mainstream of the economy. Zimbabwe, for example, has an exciting module. Mozambique has one. Uganda has one. Tanzania and Malawi. So some of our neighbors in SADC have moved in leaps and bounds to address some of these. So we're not inventing the wheel. All we need to do is to be able to learn from their experiences and reflect as to how we're able to use this in our country. So those are the issues that we want to raise with you. Thank you.
Quickly. Just one quick thing. I'm sure about customs and excise. Remember, it's 15% to 20% of the current revenue. What's your aim? If that's some correct in understanding that, what is your aim by when? Secondly, on tax compliance, how do we measure against other developing countries? And the tax gap, and what percentage of people should be paying the tax that they should be, are not paying?
So on the customs excise, currently the contribution of customs is around 15 to 20. It's a work in progress. All I can say to the chair and the committee is that in other developed economies, the contribution of customs is higher, close to 20, 30, and then it's a major, because that's where trade facilitation, trade, so it has a major impact. For the moment, we don't have the figures, that's why we have elevated customs and excise as a branch on its own, so that we'll be able to harness on the experience that we pick up and the information that comes to the floor. And that in itself will give us a sense that the ratio between business and individual tax vis-a-vis customs essence, then we'll be narrowing to find that at one point, after some time, perhaps in the next 4 or 5 years, depending on how we address this matter, you might find that after a long term, customs contribute about 30 to 40%. Because the fact of the economy, they play a pivotal role. We can see it's visible, it's tangible, we can measure it in terms of the ports, containers that come through the country, the declarations that are made, and the duties that are excised that is being paid in that sector. So it's something that tangibly you can say, you can measure the number of ships that are lying outside the port. So that indicates the flow of business in the country.
This becomes a quite key measure of oversight. Because I think the percentage sort of almost doesn't convey the amount you actually get, right? That was where I was leading. So can I suggest, Bridget, that we monitor this thing actively? And if there's any way we can, help, I'm glad to say this, but maybe bring in trade and industry to meeting on Sunday or something, because that pretty cheer like me, like from morning till late at night, like we used to in the first 10 years of Parliament. So maybe on a Sunday, we get DTI and our crowd together and look at this. I'm sure they'll be interested. But what I'm saying is that this becomes a key issue. We don't wish you well in this regard. We think long overdue. My peripheral sense is that there's a lot of hope here to get more revenue. Thank you. And then on the percentages, if you can offer that. Yeah, on this very issue. Yes, please. Okay, let's have this issue of customs and excise. Because you were talking about customs and excise and something else.
Yes.
Okay, so you'll come in immediately after.
Yes, Chair, on the same issue. Now that SARS is going to establish a think tank to have an analytical approach to tax. Maybe if sometimes through our workshop prophecy so that we can make an entire because if you have to do that, you need to know some form of, to have some form of knowledge. So when we do that over time, then you know, maybe they will you know, give us some form of workshop, and then we do other chasing. So then we'll be able to do it. Monday morning.
Yes, whenever people propose, they must give us a date outside of Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from now to November 27th. Okay? Then otherwise,
I think it's going to be important for you to actually, you know, briefly share with us the strategy they have around all the different payers in the excise and customs duty environment. Because our view, I think that's something that was, I'm not sure whether it was Floyd or Tani, that has said, you know, you actually need to have much greater engagement with the people, much greater relationship with them. Because you can get a container that can come in, and those people are not like maybe whistleblowing to you to say, hey, hang on a sec. This container is suspect, you better go take it for scanning or whatever, you know. I thought that this is actually an area that we should really be focusing on, because there's a greater opportunity there to increase our revenue system.
I see your hand up first. The question was raised about the private sector playing this role. Mm. If that's the case, why is it? And I think many members here will share anxiety. There are certain areas where the private sector can play a role. Other areas, you want to be very wary as a state. So perhaps you want to comment on that. And there's Floyd, want to speak on this customer excise matter?
Yeah. Just on that point, that I'm not whistleblowing, but it's a matter of fact that FCD receives lots of containers, and it's not we just pass like to the Turner towns and ever without anything. Like we come closed from Shanghai, from Guangzhou, from Shenzhen, and then they go straight. The first time they are opened is on the doorstep of a shop somewhere in West Dean. Not only that, but there are so many other goods and services that, and they prefer to utilize SCCD because the systems are lax. The rate that must be looked into is a matter of evidence. And I think maybe what would they view that you can't allow private role players in a space. It's very dangerous for any country because I can have a lot of money and buy SCCD and whatever I want to do. I can bring anything. I can bring guns and everything else without a even closer examination of what happened. So you must be very careful of allowing such a huge part of it to control the private company. It is a very dangerous thing.
So we want to assure the honorable member that and yourself that the fact that we have elevated customs and excise to this level, it's precisely because based on the visit that you have seen, customs and excise was a step son or step daughter. It was not given the prominence. What the honorable member is saying is the truth. And therefore, we want to close that gap. Because if we don't have control of our borders and things that are coming to our country, we have lost the moral high ground. Trust by its virtue and the money that we have, we are charged within the Customs Act to be able to have access to all the items that come through the country. But as my colleagues will attest, the use of this engine without using the requisite skills of our people and having what's called stakeholder management in particular chain will not be able to deal with this issue. The case in point that he's raising wherein containers can come here undetected and move from one point to the other, these are some of the leakages that we want to close as quickly as possible. But I'm not saying that this will open tomorrow, but it's something that we're elevating to ourselves that there has been cases and we believe that we might have lost huge amounts of money through these leakages and the porosity of our path of entry.
Thank you.
We have indicated that we're working with South African Post Office and other entities that are in the postal sector, because some of the cocaine and drugs are coming through post. And therefore, they will use any form of mechanism to subvert and avoid detection. But the case in point that you're raising is right to an extent that it's long overdue that we can have a risk engine that says this one can go. But we need to be accountable for all the countries. So Transnet's relationship with us is key. So that we have an understanding of all way bills that are coming to this country. In fact, according to World Customs Organization, there's what is called advanced passenger list, or that needs to be given to us to understand what is in the container. But we should not only be satisfied what is said, but we should be able to condemn in terms of practical examination of measure of this container. So we may work on the principle of 80-20 and be able to say we do have confidence. But also because we have, in our instance, we have attachés abroad, for example, in the People's Republic of China, that our attachés could be able to attach to the container that leaves the port of Shanghai and be able to have a sense that we have a collaboration. Because corruption by its nature is so pervasive that we may allow things that we know that we have certainty that these things are not happening. So, Chair, I can assure you that at this point in time, we are doing our best, and certainly the elevation of customs to that level is to seek to address some of the concerns that are being raised here. Thanks, Chair.
Over to Makosi and Al, unrelated to the customs issue.
Yeah, Chair, you know, this matter was, I had raised it previously, but it is coming up again today, and luckily not for me. The services industry appears to be treated with kid gloves. They appear to be, and certainly we also do, if I say we, I mean us as government, we work with the services industry. They get most of their business as well through government. But if we don't pay sufficient attention to the services industry, we are actually going to end up with a whole range of other risks, other problems. That are very high risk in terms of the revenue streams of the country. For example, you will find that there is some of the auditors or whatever, private auditors, and they audit in the books, and they can pick up certain things, but because they still want this particular business, they would then turn a blind eye rather than declaring their real findings on that. But even themselves, they do, actually there was once a report in the Business Day about some of them, big ones, that are not doing business with government, and they were also involved in this, in profit shifting, where they would be shifting their profits into other countries. They have services industry, they are not product-based, they are not tangible product-based, it's merely like services. And obviously their names were there in the Business Day. I think at some point we need to discuss that here. So I just wanted you to know what are we doing about that. The other thing that I also wanted to say, Chair, is that in as much as we are going to be, SARS is going to be working with the countries in the continent to look at their own strategies in terms of the cash economy. To me, I really believe that if we are embracing the digital economy, and if we are embracing it, I think it could actually assist us a great deal in actually bringing everybody to the fore, because basically money is going to become elusive. It's a matter of having to do the transfers electronically and so forth, and therefore the paper trail is going to be there. And I think we shouldn't be losing sight of that, because I think it's going to be very important. And I do agree with the Commissioner when he says SARS is going to strengthen their relationship with the banks. I mean, as a former bank, I can tell you, if you're not going to be working very closely with the banks would be receiving this money, because practically it's very difficult to sit with a lot of money. It poses much more risk to you to sit with this stack of cash. So one way or the other, you will end up taking to to the ban. And I think that is also an area that I think is going to be important. But Chair, I wanted to say, and I'm still stressing this, I think SASE has to be very instrumental and probably one of the leading stakeholders in strengthening the digital economy, in making sure that people are actually doing, you know, the cash-free kind of a trade where people, even if you go to buy rates or something like that in the mama there on the street to simply, you know, pay with your cell phone or with whatever, or with a card or a swipe or something like that, I think there is a greater opportunity there to actually ensure that there is paper trade, we are able to track and so forth. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, yeah, thank you very much in replying to my question. I hear what you're saying in terms of your role as an institution, but if I am correct, the KPMG were commissioned by SARS, not by the Minister, if you could confirm that for me. But having said that, It is early then, if that's what you say, and the impact of any recommendations will be built in as time goes on and in terms of all the other input that has been received. Right now, is there any investigative unit that exists in SARS and has taken up some of the role that the one that has been so controversial had? And if so, in terms of what kind of legal authority does it exist, if it exists at all, I'm simply saying. And just to get back to the KPMG report, in your opinion, is there any reason why it should not be released to the public domain? We heard Adair say earlier that there are sometimes reasons why things are not divulged publicly, but in your opinion, is there any reason, having seen the report, that it should not be released? And if you could give us some idea of when it will be released. I'm sure you're in contact with the Minister about it, and when we'll see a report released to public and certainly to us and the committee. And just a small last issue, have you any idea what the cost was of obtaining that report?
Comments, contributions?
Up here,
Floyd? Sure, maybe to in a simpler way try to ask this issue about the digital purchase. We buy books and music and applications on iPhones, on Apple Store. And they make a lot of money because almost the entire process of the agency owns the iPhone Store. But do you tax that money? And what I'm curious is, do you have it please to tax that money of digital online purchases of books on even Amazon and these other role players? So that is the direct question. But I'm interested as well in terms of what is the territory number team doing, like on the birth team, what are they doing? Is there any progress thus far? What have they been engaged in? Because there seem to be lots of issues that are happening around those issues, sure.
His comment, Honorable Commissioner, I'm looking forward to going to the little border. You know, don't undermine the small borders. You see, there's people were dealt with in the suit in the 80s because they were such a very clever people. They are not average. So when we go into the Lesotho border, I will definitely be there. Not this other big one. If the Lesothos wear blankets, they don't know what is in the blanket.
Thanks, sir. The comment made by Honorable McCarthy, we have taken note on the private the services sector, services industry, and the DSR I'm coming by. We have taken note, and then of course the digital economy indeed will unlock the potential that we see emanating from, because it's something that we cannot do without. For example, in Kenya they are using PESA, the transfer of money,
and it has become so much productive in a sense that it is also opening and unlocking the potential in the rural economy. And certainly, the fear that we have about the cell phones and ability to pick up the footprint to transfer this is because they register with certain institutions for us to be able to see how the flow of money goes. So it does help. And certainly these issues we'll deal with. Our relationship with the banking industry is something that we have always cherished. We have a good relationship with the Banking Association of South Africa. We have regular meetings with them to discuss some of the issues that are prevalent in the economy share of information. So that's part of our footprint in effect. But I want to quickly indicate that the digital economy by its nature will also unlock the cash economy. One, we see, for example, now when you want to use PayPal, that's one. When you use Apple Store for certain applications of buying books through Kindle and the like, I can confess here that SaaS does collect tax on the people who are buying books or music, e-commerce. So we do get revenue. So we match that, we follow that. So the members should not get worried. We work within the World Customs and also in terms of international trade. So we have that relationship of creating that revenue. Now, with respect to the BAPS team that the Honourable Member is asking, is that we don't want to be sitting in a situation wherein we are bypassed by events and not have analytical capability. The team in the BAPS is also a factor of what is happening internationally, so that we are part and parcel of the development, do analysis, and be able to advise SARS as well as the relationship that we have with National Treasury, because also they do have this team that work on the BAPS. But it is early days, as we've indicated, we have said that we have brought the team, because we cannot just say that there is that profit shifting without going deeper into the analytics with companies and taxpayers who are involved in that space. So in the short term, is that the team is seized with the analytics and, of course, enforcement on those who are deviant and not following the law. On the question...
Sir, can I suggest with the agreement of the members that when you come in the next quarter, you'll give us your results, but you'll focus more on customs and excise and BEPS, because BEPS is occupying us a lot, and we have to move forward. We can't have endless discussions. Parliament has to come to a position. I mean, I was hoping by November we'll have a draft report, we'll go to Parliament in the beginning of the next quarter and say, have a debate and say these are the things we recommend to the executive and so on. But this is something I think we will come back to. I think we have to be more strategic about the number of committees we can rope in. Finance is our responsibility primarily, and we have to move forward. But what I'm saying is this is a major preoccupation of this committee.
Chair, so with respect to the investigative unit that the Honourable Member has asked, we don't have the investigative unit in the manner that was described in the past. We do have investigators who have been there, 300 of them, who are doing investigations in terms of the various audits that we are conducting. Now, with respect to the intelligence-driven and with illicit trade that we are discussing, and we have reached a very high level department with the Ministry of Intelligence, SSA, and other law enforcement, this is what we have said. We want to have that capacity, and that capacity exists in other tech administrations, but the ones that we had that we spoke about, we don't have. We do have investigators in the field of audits and, of course, following on cases that we are dealing with. Now, with respect to the KPMG report in terms of the impact that it will have on the operating model, we have indicated in my previous statement that it's still early days on issues of compliance, on issues of governance, because we can say here that the issue of governance is key in our administration that we do things correctly. And therefore, the KPMG report does highlight some of the issues that we have raised in our discussion. But some on the issues of ethics, those are things that we need to be able to address. Now, whether the report is accessible to public, I think it is important also to indicate that there are reports which are internally reports to help the administration to do its job. But in the event wherein it is served through the committee that this report needs to be for reasons that the committee may deem it necessary, certainly will measure the consequences as to the information that might be contained in it, because it might have taxpayer information, but it's meant for our own internal processes.
Now, I must indicate here that we are sharing this information because, as I said, we were busy with the units. We were also busy in terms of the governance issues. So it stretches across the whole entire organization in terms of how we want to have an organization that is accountable, organization that is compliant, and dealing with the new operating model to help us to be able to address the complications for the future. So I must indicate that we can't disclose the costs. It's an internal process, otherwise we'll be sitting with all costs across, but if the committee feels that the cost has to be not something that we have a sleepless night about, we can't reveal the cost. It's something like if there's a tender, you ask us how much did you pay and how the process was followed, process of governance, we are quite happy to share that with the committee. But it's not in our nature to be able to go to the public and say we have done this is how much it costs. But when that comes, it's required according to the law, we do comply. That's the response of the question.
Because it seems to me a reasonable request to ask about the cost. As for the other issues, that's between you, the minister, your legal advisors, and Parliament's legal advisors and intelligence committee. I have been engaging, as committee members know, with DA in regard to this. I think there's also a question of the House that helps you. So I think on the cost, that's not something that seems to me, but I'll check with that particular. An unreasonable question to ask. And these Parliament rules say that that's a statement. And as far as I think you and National Treasury, more than most institutions actually, should give answers about that. So that, unless Advocate Jenkins says otherwise, I'll confer with him in the next 48 hours. I think the cost should be made available. There's nothing wrong with that.
Chair, lastly, the UA raised the issue of in our next encounter to prepare adequately on customs and excise and the issues of that we commit. We shall prepare and present you with the report. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Any other questions?
Both,
Chairman,
a completely different line. Part of the report was about improved IT and so on.
Yeah.
As a tax practitioner and contacts with many taxpayers, one of the huge issues in terms of e-filing at the moment is you can't open the letters. They send you letters through e-filing, and you try and open them, they don't open them. Then there's no one to contact. And then you get a telephone call from some call center, and you say, please send an email. And they say, no, we don't have any facility to send us an email. Send you an email. The communication between ours and taxpayers is fraught at the moment when it's beyond the norm. The norm is fantastic. If you've got a report and a VAT report to return to do, geez, it works like clockwork. It's fantastic. But as soon as there's an audit query, then the whole communication thing is a nightmare. I was dealing with one yesterday. It just is a nightmare. And it says update to the latest version of whatever the software is. I've updated so many times and I've spoken to other guys that update and they can't open the stuff. It just doesn't open. It says you're not up to date. So that's something I don't think should be a long-term thing, Mr. Chairman. I think that should be dealt with quickly. Then the question of tax education at schools. Just a quick one. Is SARS intending to actually actively get involved in education at schools or simply to work with basic education to include something in the curriculum? Because I think that would be somewhat of outside the mandate to be directly involved. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, it's happened. Somebody told me yesterday about this matter. I get commissioning reviews, and I don't refer to any of you. Me, in fact, I get letters all the time. I kind of dislike in the current justice system. In tax issues, I don't think a chair is an ambitious agency. Between, like you're asking the chair of justice, or justice member, to intervene in the criminal justice. And I told this person, I don't know the merits either. But his point to me was, coming up simply, that I told him, you get a world class. I mentioned all these. No, he's an ANC member. But he said, yeah, the problem is that he cannot communicate. It's an outstanding issue. So I said, look, I will check with Advocate Jenkins what's appropriate for me to do and what not. If it's a matter of facilitation, dialogue, or communication issues, it's my job to do it to any member, whether you're in this committee or not. But if you want me to get involved in the merits of the issue, no, I don't get involved. What do I know in any case? So that issue coincidentally came up yesterday. That similar thing to what Alfie said. But I get that now and then. Let me say, in the money I've been here, most of the, I'll tell you things I get in the, have no basis. No basis. Some of them more about having contact with each one entity. So, in short, I'm saying that
I think where people have got odd queries and so on, that's when they back on. Is that the point you're making, Carl?
Yeah.
What's the similar thing last night?
So we take the statement very seriously, and we'll certainly look at this matter. Where in the communication is very poor, and we don't have a feedback to the taxpayer. And certainly it's a matter that I'm now raised with the team as we leave here and get into the bottom of this, because it's frustrating for taxpayers who want to be compliant and just being put from pillar to post and not getting the response. F45 in which we believe it's top of the range, and certainly it should be in a position wherein we are able to provide service seamlessly. But we're taking the point very seriously, Chair, and hopefully in the coming weeks and months we'll be able to address this. And certainly we as management, we take such recommendations and complaints seriously, so that we should not take them very lightly because they impact on the process that we have. With respect to...
Why would it not be possible for the call center to say... You talk to somebody, right? Obviously they're not going to get all the facts and they can't assist you in matter. So you say, can I send you an email in this regard? Why would a call center say no? There's no email system, firstly, right? Secondly, you know, it's the people who have problems with SARS that need to be communicated with. Because what happens is some of these people get so fed up, they find other ways, devious and so on, of not complying and evading tax and avoiding tax. I think this is an important area. So maybe what we do is, we just, this is a third area. We know this is not going to happen overnight. Promise you, we've got a million things to do. But the report to us in the next quarter, what limited progress has been.
Here, I'll ask you the acting chief operations of that his area, and he should answer here. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. And I think perhaps if we remind Chair that we go to slide number 3 of the presentation that the Commissioner made, perhaps to just emphasize that most of the questions that are being asked here are actually related to what this presentation was about. To say that we have actually done a lot of work to identify what issues need to be addressed. If you take, for example, the issue of customs and excise, we have identified that there is a need to relook at how we do things in customs, the issue of thefts, the issue of unexpected individuals, the issue of customer centricity, the issue of employees. So what I'm saying, the phase 2, which is where we are, is actually unpacking how do we actually improve customer service, issues around communication, because it's one of the key issues that we are actually looking at to say, how do we improve even the voice of the customer? If you call the contact center, do we actually know what is your expectation from our side? We want to open that channel as well, that you can give us feedback that will help us actually to improve the communication. So the issues that are being raised by honorable member there, they should have had a channel to say, I'm having a problem of 1, 2, 3, and I can't open documents. So we don't have that channel, and we're intending to improve to ensure that we actually close all those gaps as far as customer is concerned. So the first 3 months of Dane and our team is actually unpacking those things. For example, the issue of revenue collection. We are unpacking and going to the details and identifying even the low-hanging fruit that we don't have to wait for the work for them. We will implement things that we actually think can have the immediate results. So, like Chair said, that I think in future meetings we have to update as to where we are in all those issues, because the implementation will then come after probably the next 3 months or so, because we want to make sure that things that we're doing, we get maximum results, because if you're going to just talk and talk, or you don't even implement it properly, you end up not getting the results. So hence we're saying we want to take proper steps, but without actually delaying anything. But because we want to make sure that there is proper and efficient results in going forward. So all these issues, the issues around the service, we definitely want to look at it. So it's very strange that an employee can't send an email. We will have to investigate why is that the case.
Clifton, thank you everybody. ANC members, can you kindly remain behind? The rest of you, can you please leave quickly? Thank you. ANC members.
I can't remember. I'm old. No, come. We'll come soon.